apologize in advance. I've got a really bad cold, and my shoes and gum kind of keep me lubricated as I'm going on, so I apologize and not be disrespectful at all. But I found that it helps me not cough, so. So, thank you for the opportunity today. We're at a point in our milestone schedule that we need some feedback from you and from the DMCC board as we continue to move forward in the work that we're conducting on the four integrated transit studies. You have a copy of this PowerPoint in front of you. We're here in the January time frame now with the boxes that, around the particular milestones. And the reason this is important is because what we've been doing in the last couple months is setting the foundation for a lot of the decision making now that will happen for the next several months and throughout the rest of the year, actually. So it's really important that we, from our perspective, that we're on the same page as you and the DMC board, and those two bodies are on the same page as far as what we're going to do, how we're going to evaluate alternatives, some of the purpose and need statements that go along with some of these studies. So one purpose of today is to inform you, but the other is to seek some concurrence from you. Again, a thumbs up is really all we need. If you'd like to take more formal action and for us to have something on next Monday's agenda, we could do that too. But usually, you know, you give us a lot of direction in this format, and I'm comfortable with just a thumbs up or time out. We need to consider some other things. So that's kind of what we're looking for today. We like to start off our presentations with just reminding our audience that there were 10 key transportation principles in the DMC plan. And again, I'm not going to attempt to read things to you today. But again, we want to make it easy and affordable. We want to bring 30% of the people downtown by transit. We want to emphasize a park once downtown with the convenience of a downtown circulator to get people in and around downtown. Shared parking model is used. You've already seen some examples of that with the Lattice project and others, where there's public parking being proposed as part of those projects. Create world-class streets designed for people. And moving on into the next page, create an exceptional place for health, human-powered transportation. Form a downtown access authority. We have a lot of different names we're using right now in that. As a group, we need to get focused in, but transportation demand management, transportation management authority, access authority. We're going to talk a little bit about that here later today. We want to reduce the ecological footprint as part of the sustainability goals of the DMC plan. Leverage public and private transportation funding. We feel that's key. And we want an inclusive development in our downtown for all ages, abilities, and states of wellness. So we always like to remind people of really what the principles are as we're moving forward. So as I said earlier, today's presentation is a review of the evaluation framework, which I will conduct, highlights some key findings to date that other members of the SRF team will go over. By the way, this is Beth Bartz from SRF. She's going to be assisting here during the presentation, and the other members of the team will introduce themselves when they come up. We're going to seek your agreement again on these five key issues. Are we on the right track? And we're going to review then how these all tie into the May 2017 deliverables. So the ITS evaluation framework, a question that we get asked very often is, how are you going to bring all of this stuff together? How are you going to make all of these studies, whether it's the four studies we're conducting as part of this, whether it's the TDP, the Transportation Development Plan, whether it's the comp plan, whether it's other planning that's going on in the community, how are you going to bring this all together? And we've been working on that, and basically where we are now is a recommendation to you to adopt an evaluation framework that's laid out in the packet that was sent to you and also in the slides that we're going to present today. It takes into account the DMC vision, the DMC goals and the transportation principles that we just went on by establishing evaluation accounts and four evaluation accounts. Again, applying the guiding principles to those, and then each of the implementation teams will be developing their own evaluation framework, but it will be consistent with this overall framework that that will help us bring everything together. And again, the four studies that we're talking about today are the City Loop, Transit, Parking, and the Transportation Demand Authority, and the Street Use. So the evaluation principles from the evaluation framework are the project plans. They're not isolated. They're all part of an integrated planning framework. That's obviously something we want to accomplish. But this document takes it to that real formal level that everyone will have to follow this framework. Project plans are not ends in themselves. They are means of fulfilling the vision. Again, we always want to make sure we're not losing sight of the vision. Certain findings that we'll talk about today may cause us to have to reevaluate some things, but there's the overall vision, the economic development plan that is indicative of the DMC plan. The DMC plan has multiple goals and objectives. That means multiple evaluation accounts are required to fully evaluate the different studies and that will lead to the ability for you to make informed decisions. And the nature and extent of and the uncertainty of options that may come up along the way, and how are we going to handle those. So I talked about the four accounts: economy, experience, and community and experience, health and wellness, and delivery. That is laid out in a significantly more detail in the packet that was sent out to you. That begins on page 12 of the packet. Not of the PowerPoint, but of the packet, and I'm not going to again pull that up. There's about 23 pages that was included as part of that. Again, it went through and identified these four accounts and described what they were and how important they were to the overall process. So with that. Again, there was a lot of material in the packet. It gets a little deep, a little in-depth, I guess I should say. And we're relying on, again, our consulting team, who, again, works on these type of studies throughout the country and many of them throughout the world, on trying to take these complex issues that we have and get them all headed in the same direction and everybody using the same set of criteria for the evaluation. So we've never, in the city, we've never used this evaluation, this specific type of evaluation framework process that's referred to as the multiple accounts. But we would suggest that in this particular case, again, based on the multiple account evaluation, the MAE process, that is something that we should be using and going forward. So again, what we're looking for is just kind of a thumbs up. And as I said earlier, if you want to be on record in a more formal setting, we can bring an RCA to you next Monday. It would have to be basically a resolution for each of these five things we're going to talk about today. So with that, I'd open it up to any conversation and any discussion that the group may have.
All right, any thoughts? Get us started.
I'd kind of like to discuss after we see the information.
Would you like to just proceed with the next section? You mentioned other
from a format perspective, we thought it may be easier to do each of the five and have the discussion of those as we
okay.
go along, just so that we don't forget or may not remember our questions or whatever. So it's up to you, however you'd like to proceed.
Okay. Mr. Hickey?
All right, so I guess I don't know exactly what we're doing for a format here, but I'll just throw out some ideas. So on page 8 of our packet that was provided, talking about some of the principles, the transportation principles. And then on slide 5 here, and then on page 16 of our packet, kind of an evaluation framework within there. And I made some of these comments at the last DMC meeting, and some of it's been cleaned up and some of it hasn't. And just to kind of level set, you know, the elected officials, you know, will set the policy, and then the designers and the consultants, you know, make recommendations and design. So I just want to think that anytime we're deviating from the DMC plan, we're looking for a change, but that should be clearly outlined. When we look at this evaluation framework, it says it's based on the transportation principles outlined in the DMC. In several places in the packet here, we see a pedestrian first orientation for these plans, and that's not what it says in the DMC transportation principles. So from volume 2 of the DMC development plan, transportation principles for the DMC, and it's important, you know, the words matter. So you know, listen to what it is, and there's a distinction. So it's create world-class streets designed for people. Focus designs on movement and access for people, not cars. Thriving cities focus design on moving people efficiently using a balanced system of modes. So there's a distinction between people and pedestrians. And really the DMC plan, if you read it, it really does focus on a multimodal plan, not prioritizing one form of transportation over the other. And that's really, anytime you start to get in the weeds, go back to the capstone principle. So design for people and a balanced system of modes. So in here it outlines that pedestrian first is one of the DMC principles. And if you go through the plan, it's not. So if we're making a recommendation to this body and the DMC to make changes, that's fine, but it should be identified as a change, not as part of the existing plan. So that's enough for now.
Mr. Wojcik.
And I would just say that I think this is a question that we as a council just need to answer, because from a policy perspective, you know, a lot of us have done some continuing education where we've worked on complete streets and design policies and items that work, and this is a very common refrain that when you're considering the needs of the users, you go pedestrians, bicycles, transit, then cars to ensure that you're protecting the most vulnerable users. I think that is wise policy. I think that is underlying bedrock to the DMC plan. I think you'd find their professional staff would agree with you, and rather than keep going back to this, I say we put that up as a vote on a policy and settle it once and for all.
Mr. Hickey.
So again, I guess that's my point. If we're going to change the DMC plan, then I think it's a broader effort. So again, this was brought up at the last time this was briefed at the DMC meeting. It was stated that was the DMC plan. I challenged them to find it, and it's not. It's not the DMC plan. Those priorities are not in the DMC plan. If we're going to make changes, then make it clear we're making a change. We'll bring it to the DMC, and there we go. So I don't think we're that far off. If you look at the presentation materials that were presented to us, places where it says pedestrian first, you could substitute pedestrian friendly. I think you capture much the same concept, but it's not outlining a priority that does not exist in the current plan. So I think literally from my reading of the materials presented to us, pedestrian friendly is very appropriate, and it's in keeping with the DMC transportation principles.
Others? Mr. Campion.
Is the argument one of changing the DMC development plan or of guiding the city's implementation of that plan? I guess I'm missing that a little bit.
Yeah, so it's stated in here that this is based on the transportation principles outlined in the current DMC plan. And pedestrian first is not. Pedestrian friendly certainly is. And there's a qualitative difference. The last time this was briefed before the DMC, they outlined the hierarchy that Mr. Wojcik just outlined and was stated that was in the DMC plan, and it's not. So the point is, if we're going to make changes, then we should be clear we're making changes, but don't state that it's the current plan of record.
And I don't disagree with you on that.
And I'm not talking specifically.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that. That we should make it clear. I guess what I'm wondering is, can that simply be the city's interpretation of the document without having to revisit, you know, modifying the DMC framework?
So, from the staff's perspective, there is no argument.
Right.
Mr. He is exactly right. It says what it says. It says people. It doesn't say pedestrians. And as part of the studies, we will come back and make recommendations to you on particular streets where pedestrians should be first, particular streets where bicyclists should be first, particular streets where transit should be first, for example. So it's not, he's exactly correct. It's, the principle is a world-class, create world-class streets designed for people. It also talks, the plan talks about moving people. And you can move people by walking, by biking, by transit, and by cars. So it's about moving people, and that's really part of the paradigm shift that we're looking to accomplish here, moving people differently than everybody being moved by a car.
And I think that's all Mr. Hickey is saying, is that when we talk about people, which it should be multimodal and very broad brush, it shouldn't presuppose any particular mode.
Correct.
Or sequence, it necessarily. Doesn't.
There will be a point, though, that for later this year, where we'll come back to you with very specific recommendations on street topology, that a particular street should have a very strong pedestrian emphasis. I'll use First Avenue as an example, because I think we'd all probably agree that much more pedestrian focused on First Avenue than on Second Avenue walking along the backside of the Franklin Eating Station, for example. You know, so there will be some recommendations that will be forthcoming in that regard.
Okay, sounds reasonable.
Are there any streets in the downtown that would prioritize automobiles above any other modes?
There could be.
Are there?
We aren't that far yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that possible?
Today, yes.
Today there are, but.
But, you know, we aren't that far of getting to that level of identification on a particular corridor as to what the priority should be for use of that corridor.
Mr. Campion.
Let me frame it one other way, because I want to be as efficient here as possible, and I think the statement may have been levied that this is not moving as fast as some people would like. So let's spin this on its head. Does it alleviate any work for staff or reduce any possible churn by simply stating out front what our priority is going to be for people downtown? Does that make this faster, or is this the same pace whether or not we state that up front?
I think to be objective, it's the same pace.
Perfect. All right, then let's move on.
Okay.
Any more questions on the evaluation framework?
I thought it was good. I mean, it laid out the four kind of areas that I expected would need to be evaluated. It was careful to avoid balancing them against each other or playing them off each other, which I think is important. They're all kind of balanced.
In your packet was this example table of how the different representations would be utilized. And again, I think that it's a very objective approach. I personally have looked at this example and think, again, the criteria are very objective. And again, what we're trying to do is create an evaluation process that allows you and the DMC board as decision makers to have the information you need and in a format that isn't, again, I don't have to send you 200-page documents every time you need a decision. We can put it in this matrix evaluation format. We can provide the backup if you need it, but you don't need all of the information in order to see the big picture.
And on the page before it, you have the scoring method where they show if they're actually going to score these things so that you have a kind of a real numerical way to look between the different options.
Richard, I don't know if you want to talk anything more about this right now, but you brought up a great point where we talk about how do we integrate these various plans, whether it be the comp plan or the transit plan. And we know we have multiple studies out there, and and I'm sure that's a point of frustration and puzzlement for a lot of people. How do we integrate those things? Or did you want to expand any further on that comment or any ideas?
Well, I can, and so let's just start with the comp plan. Mitzi has been very forthcoming with information, very courteous in allowing my staff and the staff of SRF to participate in the comp plan process. As part of the comp plan process, we also integrated the transportation development plan and had several meetings in this room where we make sure those two plans are going to be able to sync together. The four studies that we're doing, there's weekly meetings between the people that are going to follow me up here to make a presentation. Tomorrow and Wednesday, all the teams are getting together here in Rochester, and basically our second 2-day workshop. So, and we have a system where we're cataloging and filing all the documents, so all the teams have access to all the information prepared by all the other groups, and so it's readily available to them. They can research it. They can we share it frequently and have discussions about it. I mean, there's specific things I could get into in that regard. You know, if the portal capacity is different, how does it affect parking? How does it affect transit? You know, we've started to have those conversations, and we'll have a lot more about that tomorrow because we have found some things in some of our the initial groundwork that we've been putting together here over the last couple months. So there's not a lack of conversation. I will guarantee you that. We have, again, weekly meetings. Mitzi, Charlie Ryder, and myself, and Ken and his team, weekly meetings, 2 hours every Tuesday over lunch, and basically through a meeting, and we're coordinating. Probably, I would say, I'm spending at least 20 hours a week just on this, making sure that's happening.
I certainly don't doubt that there's a lot of conversation going on. What I'm looking for are milestones and closure. You know, when do we get to the execution side? So that's what we'll be looking at.
There's a chart in there that's got that. That was
right.
That's that.
Rather use a different term than execution. But.
All right. Well, let's keep
just
moving.
Just depends
so
on what side you're on.
Get to our other presenters.
All right. Someone else, or am I still going?
You're still going.
Okay. All right. So let's see. Okay. So the DMC plan remains as a solid framework again. And I forgot our friends at the EDA. we have a lot of conversations with them. The last question Lisa asked me, I think, 4 times on Friday was, is it consistent with the framework of the DMC plan? Are you finding anything that would suggest that the framework for the DMC plan is fatally flawed or flawed in any way? So we're constantly, working in that regard from a perspective of marketing. We've been working jointly between EDA's communication coordinator, public works staff, the planning staff, and have developed a communications plan now on how we're going to share information both internally and externally with the public and the media. The other thing that you're aware of, I'm sure, but there has been just a tremendous amount of interest and development in this community over the last 2 years. When I say tremendous, I mean to the point that we are significantly exceeding the levels of interest I think we would have anticipated in just the first couple of years. And just in the projects that you've approved or that you've actually seen, and there's others that are still in development, we are approaching a success rate as it relates to the number of residential units, the amount of commercial and office floor space in the downtown that's way above projections for the 20-year period. So that's very encouraging. Development in and of itself is occurring in a manner consistent with the DMC vision. And even though all the studies aren't complete, where facilities are getting located, is consistent with the plan as it might relate to or circulate, where development projects come forward, there's discussion about the need for shared parking and possibly even some public parking as part of those. And again, the infrastructure planning that we're doing is consistent with the DMC timeline. So I just wanted to reassure you that it seems like we're taking a long time to get there. Again, the purpose of a lot of this is to validate and verify that high-level vision, and that's what you adopted. You adopted a vision. You didn't adopt a strategic plan. You adopted a vision. That's what we're moving forward to implement. So some of our studies are suggesting that a one-size-fits-all, as it might relate to the circulator, may not be the best option. Again, we haven't made any decisions. We'll talk about some of the options that we're considering. But what was proposed in the DMC plan was a tram or a streetcar. That may not be the single best solution. A combination of some of the other people movers that we talk about may be something that we should consider. And again, it's come out as a result of the conversations that we've had amongst the teams. The studies are suggesting that there may be reasons for refinement. Peak hour congestion is, and we've got some situations, particularly the portals off of Highway 52, portals being the entrances and exits from the downtown, our entrance at Civic Center Drive at 2nd Street and 6th Street are nearing capacity sooner than anticipated, and potentially have an impact then on where additional parking should be located. You recall from the DMC plan that there was a circulator was going to move along 2nd Street and not only serve St. Mary's, but also there was a big blue P out there, kind of in the just west east of Highway 52 in the 16th Avenue 2nd Street area. If the intersections are already approaching capacity as it relates to the AM peak hour volumes that they can handle, we may need to reconsider where those peripheral parking lots may be located. So, so again, it's not inconsistent with the plan, but it's the plan, again, just had a dot on a map, and it wasn't necessarily meant to be specific. But as we're further collecting more data and refining some of the assumptions that were included in the DMC plan, there may be a need to shift some of these things. Travel demand management may be an important element to address. I probably should have said is the most important. From my perspective, if we don't get the travel demand management right, none of the other things that we do will matter. It won't matter how many parking stalls we build, and it won't matter the capacity of the roadways. If we can't effectively implement a paradigm shift that gets people out of their single-occupant vehicles and starts using other means for transportation, into downtown and throughout downtown, none of the rest of anything that we're doing will matter. So that's very critical. We only have to look at Mayo for an example of how that can be done very successfully. Mayo has an excellent travel demand model in place that they utilize. They only provide parking for half of their employees, and they have shuttles to their various locations and parking lots. They work with us on park and ride service to, again, different commercial parking lots on the outside of the city, but there's still 12,000 other employees downtown that aren't Mayo employees that we're going to have to figure out a way on how to save our street capacity that we have at the portals for the visitors, for the patients, and other people who need to enter downtown for services and not create congestion for those who are just commuting in to park their car all day long. So, TDM is very important. We are conducting surveys with downtown employers and employees. I've asked the consultant to not only talk to the employers, but let's reach out and talk to the employees. Let's reach out and talk to Local 21, the hotel and restaurant employees union. Let's talk to the people who actually need to get to work and what some of their experiences have been and what some of the challenges will be for them. So we're taking a very broad approach to trying to find out exactly what some of the challenges might be and provide an alternative. My commitment always has been all along is that we need to provide something that's safe and convenient as an alternative. It has to be safe and it has to be convenient, because if it isn't, again, the plan will fail. The City Loop holds the potential to be a really transformative element of downtown Rochester. We have, and getting back to coordination, we've been participating and paying attention to what the Heart of the City group has been doing. And for any of you that have followed that, some of the information that Terry Quant from that consultant team has gathered as to what it is the patients and the visitors are looking for in the way of from the perspective of what they do with their time when they aren't in an appointment. And I think a lot of people assume that basically they want something active to do. And what we really have identified...
Mr. Campy.
I feel it would probably be important now. I think we have 90 minutes left. Do we want to set some like checkpoints here? Or are we not going to... How much time do you have left? I just want to make sure we're not setting people up that are waiting to talk about the downtown parking if we also have... Now I see we have 7 people waiting to present this towards zero deaths thing. How much time do you think you have left?
30 minutes.
30 minutes. How much do we think parking is going to take?
45.
Okay, so maybe we should boot parking now and just say we're not going to get to it and reschedule it. Because ultimately, I'd like to finish this, and I want to talk at length about this parking one. I just don't know. I wouldn't want them to sit around and not have time to talk.
Do we have anyone who's come from out of town for the parking discussion?
Came all the way from Indiana.
Do we have a hard stop at 5?
I do, but you guys can keep going.
Yeah, because you got
to
take off.
Jump to the parking? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I would love to hear. I want to hear all of these things. It's too bad they all got aligned on the same day.
Yeah,
just letting you know you're on the shot clock.
Okay. Beth, I need you to go back one on that point. I just want, if I don't leave you with anything else today,
right?
I want to leave you with this picture. In this image. This is what travel demand management is all about. The space required to transport 60 people, if they're all in their cars versus they're on one bus or if they ride bikes. So the space utilization, again, what the physical space of the right-of-way is used, the portal capacity, this is the image that we want you and the public to remember as it relates to these studies that we're performing. Is it's all about the utilization of the space that we have and what's the most effective way. We realize it's not going to be one or the other or the other. It's going to be some sharing of that space. But this is the one thing I want to leave with you.
Okay. I want to apologize. The intent was not to cut you off, but merely to put some time caps on all the things we have to cover. So maybe...
Yeah.
I'm sure we have a lot of representatives here to talk about this one, and I really do want to talk about the plans.
Okay. Mona's going to follow me.
Perfect. All right.
I will keep it brief.
How's that for an introduction?
That's okay. I'm used to doing it quick. My name is Mona Elabatti. I am the project manager that is managing the consultant team that is working on the transit circulation study, which I know all of you are very interested in. So I'll just quickly walk through our process here. Our transit circulation study is really building on some of the initial work that was developed and some of the recommendations that were developed as part of the DMC plan. But we are taking a finer, more detailed look at the transit alternatives. And here's a nice simple graphic that talks about our process. And I'll just walk through it very briefly. The first step in our process is really to establish our purpose and need. What are the key needs that we are trying to serve? So we really have a good understanding of what the purpose of this transit investment really is. From there, we develop conceptual alternatives that potentially meet that purpose and need. You might have heard this phrase before, but sometimes we call this the universe of alternatives. We want to consider all options outside of the box thinking. What are the potential options that could be considered to serve our purpose and our need? From there, we screen down alternatives and really do a more detailed analysis on a select few alternatives to really understand how much they cost, how many people will use them, what are the benefits, and what are the impacts. And from there, then we can really move into coming back and getting input and recommending a preferred alternative. And then from that preferred alternative, it's really developing an implementation plan on next steps. How do we move forward with this alternative? So one of the key items that we want to get your endorsement on today is the project purpose and need. I'll quickly talk through these needs. There are 5 fundamental needs that we identified that really set the framework for our transit circulation study. First is the implementation of the DMC plan is going to significantly increase travel to downtown, as you all have heard. The second is the existing transportation network won't be able to accommodate all of the planned development that is part of the DMC plan, again, as you all are aware. And we want to make sure that we're encouraging parking programs and policies that are really going to encourage people to use other modes, multimodal solutions. So we want to make sure that, you know, we're not continuing the pattern of using existing parking programs and policies that really don't provide any incentives for people to get out of their private automobiles. The fourth is the existing transit system can't effectively capture all of the large potential growth that is planned for downtown. And the final need is the implementation of the DNC plan without strategic transportation investment is going to result in severe congestion at the downtown entry points along some of the primary streets, as we've all been hearing. So those five key needs really set the framework for our purpose statement, which is the purpose is to provide, is the purpose of the Rochester Downtown Transit Circulation Project is to provide high quality downtown public transportation service for residents, commuters, businesses, patients, students, and visitors that will support the City of Rochester and the DMC District transportation, economic development, and livability goals. And, of course, substantially increase public transportation use in downtown. So that is the fundamental purpose and need statement. Our purpose and need really identified three key markets that we're trying to serve with our transit circulation study. The first is male passengers between St. Mary's and downtown. The second is to provide access to peripheral parking locations for St. Mary's and downtown employees. And then to provide internal circulation within downtown for employees, residents, patients, visitors, and students. So there's three key markets. So when Richard was talking about not a one-size-fits-all approach, this is really what we're talking about. There are three different markets, and we could potentially serve those markets with different investments. So moving along to the Tier 1 alternatives, the universal alternatives, we've really identified a variety of modes that we are going to start considering. We're looking at transit alternatives that are elevated, that are at grade, and are below grade. So some of the alternatives that you see here, they're identified with pictures. We are going to be considering a moving sidewalk, an automated guideway transitway, which is could be either a monorail or some other technology that is elevated above the ground. We are also considering personal rapid transit. We are also looking at driverless technologies and driverless shuttles, which is a new technology, and we're considering that at all grades, and then magnetic levitation. And I might want to just add that we, at the very beginning of this process, had a transit technology workshop. Some of you might have been participants at that. And some of these alternatives and modes that we're talking about today actually stemmed out of that transit technology workshop, where we had people provide input on some of the things they really want us to consider.
Yeah, I'll just throw this out here real quick. So I did attend the transit technology workshop in October. One of the common threads on some of these more exotic forms were a lot of them were just prototype systems or small scale. And I mean, I can speak for myself personally. I would never endorse or vote a system for Rochester that hasn't been tested someplace else and been successful. So while you want to cast a wide net and kind of maybe take a look at some of these things, I would encourage you to focus on kind of more practical, tried, and true transportation methods. Some of these, again, if they haven't been done someplace else, we don't want to be the guinea pig.
Thank you. One of the things that we'll be looking at as part of setting our evaluation framework is proven technologies and risks. So that is certainly one of the areas, you know, one of the key measures that we'll be looking at. You know, can we look at it? Is there an operating system? Is it easy to implement? Some of those factors that really will help us identify if it's a feasible alternative to study.
We'll be exposed to those. You're going to come back and list those out so we can kind of take a look. Perfect.
Yes.
Thanks.
When would we expect
the photo in the upper right corner actually is in, that's at Heathrow Airport. That system's been operating for a number of years. So that is a PRT system that is operating there. We haven't dug
into out exactly what you're talking about.
How effective it's been or whatever, but it does exist. So it is existing technology.
When do we answer that question? Time frame of what we expect to see here?
Probably in 6 months. We'll be back with a finer, more screening of these alternatives.
Some of the options that we're considering at grade at a surface level are your traditional or more conventional modes, like bus rapid transit, tram, or, you know, also known as streetcar or light rail transit, And again, we are also looking at autonomous shuttles. There are autonomous shuttle deployments kind of all over the country that are happening, and we're looking at that really at all levels. And we're also considering underground options, just to identify, is there something that's feasible? Could we look at a moving underground? Would an autonomous shuttle underground also potentially be an option? So we're really trying to think, cast our net widely and be creative and think outside of the box, with the goal of narrowing these alternatives and getting down to, you know, say three alternatives or so to study in much more detail.
Okay, we have hydrograph and water tables. Is underground even going to be financially feasible for the city of Rochester?
We don't know yet. That, like I say, we're still up here.
It's still, there's still, it could be still?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But potential challenges with the different options will certainly be factors that go into our evaluation. So constraints, not just water tables, but underground utilities, cost of construction, all of those things are factors that feed into our evaluation. I won't go through this map in a whole lot of detail, but this is really to illustrate that we are considering all options throughout the DMC boundary. We're looking at east-west options as well as north-south options. Again, really kind of basing some of our work on some of the findings that came out of the DMC plan. Looking at 2nd Street is one of the major points of emphasis, along with north-south connections. So we also have some public meetings tomorrow where we're hopefully going to get some input from folks on these potential alternatives. And that's just a summary of all of the modes that we are considering. And at this point, one of the key things we'd like to get your feedback on is on the purpose and need, an agreement or an endorsement on the purpose and need statement.
Could you just highlight the significance of the purpose and need and the alternatives analysis in terms of how that relates to the federal process?
Absolutely. So the purpose and need is really step one and is the most fundamental step. It's basically what you set your evaluation framework on. If you move forward and you know, are going to apply for federal funding, you need a purpose and need statement for your environmental process, and the FTA really looks at that and points back at your purpose and need statement. So it's really fundamental and really important, and all of the alternatives that we study need to fundamentally come back and answer the question, does this meet the purpose and need for the project? So it's really an important process. Back in the several years ago, the Federal Transit Administration used to actually have a review milestone point at this point in the process to say, do they buy our purpose and need statement? Because if you're going to go through their process, they want to make sure you have a solid purpose and need statement before they even consider you for any federal funding.
Mr. Hickey? We're not necessarily going to do it today, but I'd really like to zero in on some of the practical forms of transportation. Have this group kind of either do a quick study and narrow it down. But, I mean, we're not going to do a maglev system for our circulator. We're not going to do an underground vehicle subway. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So I think we could potentially spend, again, we're not going to do it today, but we could spend time studying alternatives that are really not practical. I'd like to have some kind of accelerated study and get it zeroed down to some of the practical things that are really going to be considered.
So my expertise is not transportation. I hope that when we hire you bring a lot of expertise to the table in transportation. So I assume any knowledge I would bring to this about eliminating things you've already got. So I'm going to, I understand the direction you're kind of offering. I'm assuming you'll already do it. The statement, the project need, and the project purpose to me look good. So I'd say if you need affirmation, I guess I would take straw poll here to affirm that you guys can go forward.
Okay. And maybe that'll be a conclusion, maybe not today, but we, after receiving this information, we could sift it a little bit, maybe put a few guardrails on it in terms of managing some of the effort.
You might want to mark page 18, that's where it is.
All right.
So,
okay, let's keep moving.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Do you need the affirmation? Like, are you guys looking for verbal confirmation here?
Either here or at your council meeting on the 3rd.
I just assumed.
Or the 6th.
I mean, this stuff is, I'm perfectly fine supporting this today.
In general, for any of the information today, I don't know that we are prepared to throw anything out. I think we're taking in the information and we want to make some informed choices for you.
Back when you showed that timeline that's completely unreadable to regular human beings, That point 6 months from now of narrowing this down, is that on that chart?
Yes.
Okay, that was my... I just want to make sure we're keeping with the time.
So on page 16 of the packet.
Well, it says May screening results for transit circulation studies, so I'm assuming that's what you're talking about.
Mr. Ruska?
I guess, are you asking for us to support the statement on page 18? Is that what you want to...
Yeah, I think that's what we're looking for. I mean,
I think we're all okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems
good to me.
I mean, if that's what you're looking for, I guess I'd say that...
That's what I
got. Three.
There's nothing here that's objectionable.
Speak now.
I have none.
Unanimous.
Yep. I'll put anything in there to be objectionable.
So again, it's kind of
Mark. And on your point on the Mag 11, I think in some of the reports I've seen, I think they pretty well rule that out, saying that's more appropriate for between cities. So they are looking at that kind of those kind of things already.
And just to make sure what we're agreeing to. So page 18 is project purpose and need statement. That's part of it. The other one is alternatives. So if we're agreeing on the alternatives that are going to get an in-depth look, I don't think it's practical to spend a lot of resources on all those alternatives. So I'd like to see a process where we do a quicker evaluation on some of these more exotic ones so we don't spend a lot of time and come back 6 months from now having spent a lot of time evaluating things that just aren't practical.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Our intention is actually not to study all of those alternatives in a lot of detail. It's actually to do a higher level analysis and screening to filter down the number of alternatives and spend all our resources and effort on
Sounds
up
good.
To three alternatives.
Perfect.
Thank you. All right. Yep, move on.
Hello, everybody. My name is Patrick Corkle, and I'm coordinating with Street Use. And we heard a little bit today from Richard talk about portal capacity. And obviously that's the way of getting people in and out of our downtown. And I'm gonna spend a little bit more time probably talking more about vehicles and what we found so far. But obviously that has a lot to do with how people get down here using a car versus where we just heard Mona talking about other options where we have higher occupancy vehicles like transit to get people into downtown. So why did we update? The DMC had a shot at the portal capacity. That information's maybe a little bit older. So what we did is got new data. So we've been here this last fall, October, November, we collected data. And what we did is we actually collected very detailed data. It's AM and PM peak hours coming into downtown. Actually, we did 24 hours. We really looked at the AM and PM, looking at very short increments, and really looking at very detailed analysis of the intersections as those portals come into the downtown area. And so what did we find? Kind of getting right to the point. What we found, and I know you won't be able to read the numbers, but those arrows represent how many more cars we'd be able to get into the downtown area. But what we first found is that the DMC plan, there may have been 53% available capacity. What we did with the more updated numbers and the AM peak, there's maybe 42% capacity available, and maybe the PM peak getting out to 45%. And I think one of the things that we found from the analysis is really coming from City Center or 2nd from 52, there's really limited in that northwest-west area to get into downtown, where the available capacity is more maybe to the south and east. So I think that was kind of important to see where that's going. And why is that important? That is going to inform, as we'll probably hear from Craig, about parking locations. You know, outside of those portal areas, if we're going to be just inside, but we have very low capacity, and they're coming through that portal, you know, we need to be on the other side of that constraint so we're not having issues at that location. It also will help out on understanding how we might need to change modal split. Those numbers were existing, so as we use the comp plan numbers and we see where the additional people are coming from, we're going to have to figure out how we might need to increase the split, the people coming in transit, or what routes they might need. And so, I think that's very important to the other studies as they go forward using that information. I don't know if there's any questions about portal capacity. More feeds into the, probably what I'll say, kind of purpose and need of the other studies.
What's the bottom, sewer capacity in Northwest?
So I think that for me was just to remind me a little bit in the fact that the numbers that I'm showing you now is really the existing.
Sure.
But in the future, we're going to have future, and that's going to consume, and it might be more, with a comprehensive plan, that there's going to be more growth in that area that has the limited capacity.
Okay.
Just one question, a real quick answer, hopefully. Were you surprised by the amount it had been constrained since the last data was at CAC? Or?
And again, the data used previously was 2009, so we're basically 7 years later. Yeah. And I think we were overall surprised, particularly on the 52 portals.
Okay. So that'll have some significant impact. So
I'm glad to hear them popping up. I'm glad to hear the 52 portals popping up, because I get a number of complaints about how dangerous they are right now.
But it's good information to know, and basically what it means is cars must come off prior to that bottleneck,
right.
Period.
Exactly.
I think that's a good way of summarizing the finding.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next segment.
Alrighty. Good afternoon. I'm Craig Vaughn as well. I'm the Parking and TDM or TMA Study Lead, Transportation Management Association or Authority. I'll get into that in a little bit here as well. And one thing you're going to see as a common theme is the integrated nature amongst the various studies that we're providing you with an overview this afternoon. As you heard Mona talk about with respect to the transit and the needs for connectivity of the transit circulator or otherwise to the external areas of the DMC boundary or outside the downtown area, and Pat talking about the portal capacity, you're going to hear me now speak about from a parking perspective, and as Richard put it very well, the travel demand management, which feeds into a transportation management authority or access, or association rather, is about managing access. So this is more about access than parking. And I think we had a really good discussion too earlier about pedestrians versus people. So I believe one of the comments you'll see on here is Rochester needs the people, you just don't need the cars at this point, given some of the constraints or issues or bottlenecks, portals, or capacity at those portals that we talked about. So it really comes down to using or leveraging parking as an access management tool, managing where you place that parking and how you move those people from those locations to where they want to be. One way to do that is through transportation demand management. You heard Richard say that is one of the most key or cornerstone elements of how we're going to achieve success with respect to any of these studies. It's a way whereby you encourage access through programs or incentives that use multiple travel modes and make it easy to choose not to drive your single occupant vehicle on a daily basis, and making sure that you can identify or develop a mode target or a mode shift split, whether that's single occupancy vehicle, transit, bikes, or pedestrians traveling into and out of the DMC boundary area. Once again, just to underline and provide you with an overview of the relationship between street network, portal capacity, and parking relationship, I won't belabor this point, but I think it's been very well made from myself before I even got up here, is as you can see, if we have the constrained portals or congested portals, we have to place the parking fields somewhere outside of those areas, and as the council member so eloquently put it a moment ago, got to catch them before they get to those points. So that's wherein, with respect to the parking study, trying to identify where are those parking locations external to the DMC boundary area or outside downtown where you can place them. It is also, too, understanding that for the most part, shifting future employees is likely the easiest one to capture. They're the ones that are, those individuals are the ones that are parking for 6 to 8 to 12 hours a day, depending on how long you're working your shift or staying at the office. So trying to make sure that you can free up some additional capacity with respect to either parking or the street network itself, and then allowing other users or other individuals to utilize that portal capacity or those parking fields to either, from a patient perspective, a visitor perspective, or an economic development generator perspective, getting into the downtown area or DMC boundary area. So as I maybe pointed out or maybe glossed over to begin with, Kim Lee Horn, Nelson Nygaard, and Urban Trans are the consultant team that are working on the parking and TMA study for the city of Rochester. And Kim Lee Horn assessed, one of the first things they did was an assessment of the existing parking system and transit system that's currently in place here in the city of Rochester, assessing it or rating it against 20 different characteristics. The high marks across those varying characteristics indicates the ability for the existing system to either be built upon or amended to support the DMC vision for the downtown area and the DMC boundary as a whole. And one thing that is probably a key takeaway here, the last bullet on this slide to note, is that the city's program as it stands today received a rating of 170 out of 200 potential points, which is actually one of the highest rankings
were scores for a city the size of Rochester amongst the evaluations or assessments that Kinley has done up to this point. So you're in a very good position, and the system that is in place that the city is currently managing, whereby the parking facilities, the transit systems are fully integrated or more or less vertically integrated with one another, set up very well to be expanded upon, modified, and manipulated moving forward to achieve success for the study. Got a little happy finger there. So I will offer to, as I preface the next few slides here, the item that we would like discussion on for you for affirmation is with respect to a component that the parking and TMA study is looking to offer at this point leading up with everything that they've done, is that link between parking as an economic development tool, and whereby you'd want to outline a set of parking and economic development policies to help guide things moving forward. The parking TMA study recommends 8 key policy statements for your consideration. They are with respect to significant investment in parking infrastructure, and understanding that that is something that's to be cherished. It's a good legacy system that currently exists here in the city of Rochester. It's something that can be built upon. The city should continue to view parking as an important civic piece of infrastructure. Consider the potential and using parking as an incentive option for economic development or community investment, and encouraging several fundamental philosophical or related policy considerations relative to new parking analysis tools. That's a key point that's coming out of the parking TMA study as well, is developing a model that will allow the city of Rochester to manage its parking resources not only today, but as the city morphs and changes into the future. The next 4 slides here are the 8 key policy statements. I'll simply read the bolded elements and ask for your affirmation or general consideration of those, as they're more or less a policy or perspective that you want to move forward with. Maintain ownership of the parking assets and grow the system. Number 2, set an expectation of a 5-to-1 return on parking investments. There, what you're looking at is identifying and stating that we have an investment that we've already put in from a capital expenditure, and what we want to see is a 5-to-1 return on that investment from an economic development standpoint on the public sector side.
I think we exceeded that on the Broadway Center project. That's, for example. Go ahead.
Great point. Strongly support the concept of shared parking. That's been a term that you've heard numerous times already prior to me getting up here and speaking about it. So that's a key policy statement to continue to move forward. Leverage parking investment to support new development opportunities. I'll just give an example real quick here for a moment. As we understand, understanding that the downtown area, the DMC boundary area, we'd like to leverage current space or redevelopment space for economic development or the buildings that we want to house our commercial office space, retail, or otherwise in, rather than parking structures or whatnot. So try to obtain some type of shared parking configuration or public investment on the parking side to support the new development opportunities that may come forward. Support a consolidated parking management organization to promote effective and customer-friendly parking and access management. I will offer that this is something that's already currently in place, so this is more of a continuation of the integrated parking and access management organization that's already been well-started here in the city of Rochester. Develop a robust parking planning function. I will say that this has already been started with respect to the transit system and parking system, but making sure that as things change or shift and needs kind of are altered, we want to make sure that this moves forward and as most integrated and streamlined as possible. Create a balanced and sustainable community access strategy. That's kind of getting back to the point about a multimodal transportation system and understanding that parking is a key component of managing access. And then the last one here, promote a park once, pedestrian first approach to downtown Rochester and integrating good urban design principles relative to parking facility design. What that's getting at is make sure that once we do have those visitors or patients or otherwise parking within the downtown area, the DMC boundary, that we then have the other pieces of infrastructure that are in place to encourage them to continue linking and moving amongst the transportation system on foot.
And we'd recommend that the pedestrian first be changed to people first?
No, pedestrian friendly would be fine.
Pedestrian friendly, okay.
Because it captures the same thing, just doesn't assign a priority.
Comments or move on? All right.
Looks good.
Fantastic. I guess, again, to your timeline, When do we see the actual proposed parking locations? Because this is something that actually has changed from the initial BMC plan, because we built underneath that one.
Council members, when you look back at that milestone chart that's at the beginning and at the end, you'll see we have several different milestones. We have a May milestone coming up. And as we work tomorrow and the next 20 days in our workshops, we will be identifying some integrated systems for you to consider that will reflect a combined framework of a transit system integrated with various parking locations and a street network that is in response to that. So we'll be developing some ideas, coming back to you with those in May, and then settling on a preferred scenario in September.
Patrick Corkle again with street use. One of the other things that my team is working on will be what the streets would look like or how we'd use those streets. So what's in front of you that I handed out is what we're calling a block-by-block assessment. So my team has went through and started looking at the streets and the existing use, and I don't want to get too caught up in everything that's on the table, but they'll go block-by-block, understanding the dimensions are out there, what's how it's being used, and this information they can provide to our other team members. The other thing that I'll go along with this is there'll be some evaluation criteria to talk about how well these streets accommodate pedestrians, transit, vehicles, etc. So it's one of the elements. But I think the more important thing that we want to show as we go through, we have this existing information, is to talk a little bit how we can show what this looks like. And what I have up on the screen here is the Rochester downtown 3D model. So actually what you're looking at is not a photograph, but actually a digital rendered 3D model. And what we're able to do with that, and I just want to give a hypothetical, let's say we're going to do it a street, but just to give you an idea what it could look like. What we're able to do here on the left would be the existing 4th Avenue. And I knew where I was because I wasn't sure where my staff took this shot from, but by going and looking, I could see the buildings on the right that were just south of 1st. And what we'd be able to do there by using the actual dimensions with the 3D model and the information is here we have a couple of lanes of parking and two lanes for traffic and pedestrian amenities. What we can do is quickly take some information and say, well, what would the street look like if we wanted to have one lane of parking, one for vehicles, one for transit, and a cycle track? Just hypothetical, just throwing that out there. But what would that look like, and how would that fit within that space? And this would be a way of bringing back to everybody to show what it looked like in a quick way of seeing what your streets could look like downtown based on the information you provide us and what we want to try to get on each one of the streets. So hopefully we think this is going to be a useful tool
So you can do that virtually for every street and every block and then see how it all fits together. And again, how the different modes move within not only the one corridor, but the entire downtown.
Love area. It.
Yeah. So hopefully good information right. for you guys.
Good.
All right.
Thank you.
One more.
Time. Thank you.
So I'm Jonah Gazy. I am the coordinator for the City Loop project. And once again, we've kind of taken some of the thinking that's being used for the transit and trying to apply that methodology to the City Loop project. And so we're really trying to understand what is the purpose and the need of the City Loop as it relates to the various goals of the DMC district. And you know, we see the City Loop project as being envisioned as a really a high quality biking and walking facility that really is an attractively branded place. It wants to be distinctive. So as you're moving through downtown, as you cross it or you're moving along it, you are in a very high distinguished place that you know you are on the City Loop. And this actually can be a very transformative component for how people experience downtown Rochester. We really see that the City Loop is something that can be provide benefits to a whole cross-section of users. And really some of the main goals that the City Loop is trying to do is try to provide another mode of transportation for folks, provide a recreation outlet, actually help improve health, provide some economic development benefits, as well as some sustainability goals. And similar to what Mona is talking about with transit, the City Loop can be doing that same thing. This is another option to get people out of their cars
and give them other alternatives of how they can move to and through downtown. And another kind of component of this that we really want to, that we really feel that the City Loop can provide, and this actually relates once again to what Richard was saying with the, some of the findings from Heart of the City, is the fact that they're finding out that people not only, when we're thinking about health, we want to think about people's physical health, improvements to that, and so by being able to get out and bike and walk, you can actually help decrease some of those issues like, you know, heart conditions, obesity, but also we found that a number of people who are visiting, especially the patients and their companions, really need to be able to get out and find those green spaces in the community, find those quiet places where they can relax, and we can kind of mentally restore themselves. So we really see that the City Loop is a key component of that in terms of helping people not only improve their physical health, but their mental health. And with, so in order, though, to get people to do that, we really, once again, have to think about what Richard said. It has to be safe, convenient, and comfortable. And in order to get people onto the City Loop, we really need to think about how to make it safe and convenient. And there's kind of a general rule of thumb that, in particular bicyclists, that 1% of them are considered strong and fearless. And those are the bicyclists that you're seeing who are right off the traffic lanes, right in the heart of traffic. There's another 5 to 10% that are called enthused and confident. And for the most part, those probably that 10% are the people who are probably biking to work today. Then there's another 60% of the population who said they're interested, but they're concerned about biking. And then there's a 30% who say, no way, no how. You're never going to get me on a bike. So the City Loop is really focusing on that 60% of people who are interested, but right now are a little concerned. So we really need to think about providing a facility that is really a high amenity destination, provides those facilities that they want, water, benches, trash, an easy wayfinding thing, and something that they feel safe and comfortable using. And so that's what we're really trying to do with the City Loop. And then lastly, we're doing quite a bit of precedent studies of other systems around the nation and actually internationally to help guide how we're designing the City Loop. These are examples of New York City and the cultural trail in Indianapolis. So what we're asking here, in terms of our purpose and need, do we seem to be going on the right track with the City Loop?
Absolutely. All right. But just when do... The route that was in the DMC plan doesn't work. Everyone understands that now. When will we see the route? Everyone's dying to see the route.
I think that's something we're working on between now and May. Okay. Joni and I have already been looking at it. And Southwest Rochester was the area that was problematic because they actually had the route, I think, on 6th Avenue between 2nd Street and 6th Street. Mm-hmm. It's not really accessible with cars on a slippery day like tomorrow. So to expect people in wheelchairs and people who aren't well-versed in biking to negotiate that, we have to find a different connection in that Southwest quadrant.
Okay. Purpose and need is on 48. It seems pretty reasonable. I think that's what you're looking for to head on.
So, once again, I'm not sure, Richard, that we need any sort of formal action at the council. I think there's enough consensus here that we proceed with the purpose and direction statement and some of the ideas. We'll certainly be looking for some of those milestones and so forth in May and then beyond.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right. Yeah, moving back, we'll step back in our agenda to the Zero Death presentation. I assume that's why we have our guest back there.
Or else they're in big trouble.
Mitzi, do we have a hard stop for our out-of-town guests? Oh,
I'm also out here at 5.
Just one off. Here, about
you said you needed about 35 minutes.
Do we know how long theirs is?
That's what I asked.
All right, that's fine. Great. Thank you.
Did she say how long it was? Did she say how long? I think she was. Oh, perfect. Thank you.
I can move around.
All right, who is our Jessica? Are you our presenter?
I am.
Go for it.
Everyone else, please be kind while the speaker has the floor here.
All right.
Okay. So, my name is Jessica Schlicht. I'm the Southeast 4-0 Desk Coordinator. I've been the coordinator for Southeast Minnesota for a little more than 3 years, but I've actually been a part of the TCD program for more than 7 years. So, I brought a few of our TCD partners along with me today.
Scott McConkey, law enforcement liaison to Southern Minnesota for the Office of Traffic Safety.
Troy Christensen, State Patrol, I'm the Public Information Officer.
John Turkbrush, Police Department, I supervise the department's accident investigation team.
Brad Peterson, I'm John Turk's assistant.
Kevin Torgerson, I'm the County Sheriff's Office.
And I'm Fausto Cabral, I'm the Assistant to the State Engineer and Assistant to the District Engineer for the DOT. My job is to work with cities and counties, and we are part of the engineering of the TCD program.
George Calabot, Traffic Engineer.
So we also work with local fire departments. We work with Mayo Trauma Injury Prevention. We also work with Mayo One. So we have a lot of partners. There's a lot of things happening in our region with TCD and have been for quite some time. So what is TCD? I'm not sure how many of you even know anything about the program, but it was a program that was launched in 2003 when we were having many deaths on the road. 655 people died in Minnesota in 2003 alone. So it was decided that what we're doing just wasn't enough. So it was created by the Minnesota Departments of Public Safety, Public Health, and Transportation as a deliberate interdisciplinary approach to traffic safety. So the members of the TZD program team realized that moving towards this goal of zero death would require us to build connections between state agencies and local organizations. So our vision is very simple, to reduce fatalities and serious injuries on Minnesota roads to zero. Our mission explains how we're going to do that, but it's basically by collaborating. We use the 4E approach, which is enforcement, engineering, education, and EMS. We've recently included this fifth, which is everyone else, because everyone here shares the roads. So TCD regional partnerships have been developed across 8 geographical regions along the state of, or across the state of Minnesota. They're led by TCD regional coordinators like myself. Each has a local steering committee made up of traffic safety stakeholders. They're generally run by MnDOT district engineers and state patrol captains. So you'll see my area in yellow down there. You'll also see to the right-hand side there, we have our seatbelt use by regions. You'll notice Southeast was 87.3% in 2015, but that actually increased to 88.9% in 2016. So you can see that Southeast is a leader in belt usage in Minnesota. So law enforcement liaisons contract with the Department of Public Safety, the Office of Traffic Safety, to be a resource to law enforcement agencies regarding TCD.
Sure. I was before you not too long ago, if you recall. I think I was a footnote to your Uber discussion. We won't be that long. But I don't envy the incredible task you have before you that we heard earlier. Kind of reminds me of being locked in college, never allowed to graduate and have a term paper due every week of your life. It's a huge project. But I think I shared with you before that in my position as a state patrol trooper prior to this job, and now I've had a lot of opportunity to share with students and talk with them, and every time I always ask a question, how many know somebody personally that has died in a car crash? Without exception, I get one quarter to one half of the hands go up. And what that tells me as a former law enforcement officers and us as government officials, that traffic safety has to be one of our priorities. And I represent the E in the E's that Jessica was talking about, the law enforcement E. And we're kind of the accountability measure. And as you know, if you're a parent, you can educate, set standards, but if you keep saying, don't do that, this might happen, no, I mean it this time, I mean it this time, if there's not accountability, a lot of things don't come together. So that's what we provide. We have 4 LELs across the state, law enforcement liaisons, that work with every law enforcement agency to coordinate traffic enforcement campaigns. You're probably well aware of them. Drive sober, get pulled over, click it or ticket, move over, speed and seatbelt initiatives. I might be missing one. But it hit all those key areas. And to provide that level of accountability, at the same time working with all the other D's to educate, to provide the message through media and public information. So that's my role. And I just want to say you are very fortunate because I work with a large area to have the level of enforcement that you have here and the dedication to making sure there's accountability through law enforcement to keep your community safe. And I always end by saying, you got to understand, when your officers issue traffic tickets, they're not doing it because they're mean. They do it because they know all too well what can happen if they don't. So thank you very much.
Okay, so as I mentioned a little earlier, in 2003, we were seeing an uptick in traffic-related fatalities. 655 people died on our roads in 2003 alone. In 2015, last year, we saw 411. You'll notice I'm going to say preliminary a lot because 26 is not, we have not confirmed those numbers. But as of right now, we're sitting at 398.
And this includes bicycles, pedestrians that are killed on the roadway as well. Okay.
But so what we're doing is working, but one death is too many. So it took a lot of effort and collaboration to get here. These are just a few of the legislative initiatives that have helped to push our trend line down. So these actions are a result of a direct change in Minnesota's traffic safety culture, because most legislators won't support a bill unless most people are in favor of it.
We are reaching a plateau, as you see there, and Jessica's going to talk about this later. And that's why we're visiting everybody, all the communities and the cities and counties, etc., because we need to figure out what else can we do to come below that plateau. And when Jessica compared our state with other states, they're going higher. We're doing something right. We're staying there, but we need to improve even on top of what we did so far.
For those of you who don't follow traffic safety very closely, Iowa had 87 more fatalities in 2016 than they did in 2015. So it's just one of the state's comparisons. So this slide shows how factors that contribute to cat crashes are interconnected. I don't think it's any surprise to us that 93% of the time, driver error is a factor. So after analyzing Olmsted County crashes and trends, the Strategic Highway Safety Plan outlined 20 focus areas. So these circles represent 167 fatal and serious injury crashes that occurred in Olmsted County from 2011 to 2015. Of those, you'll notice the two largest circles in the center represent 66 lane departure crashes and 68 intersection crashes. So as we continue to target zero fatalities, we focus primarily on the center of the bullseye, but just knowing that all the focus areas have a significant capacity to improve traffic safety. So the table to the right shows the number of deaths in the southeast region by year. I'd like to point out that even though Minnesota did see an increase in traffic-related fatalities from 2014 to 2015, that southeast actually decreased. Preliminary reports show that we're at 56 fatalities in southeast for 2016. So you might be thinking that's only three people, but that's three people that were saved by our efforts. So Southeast is really heading in the right direction. So like I said, in spite of our efforts, Olmsted County had 14 fatal crashes in 2015. That number for 2016, again, preliminary, but we are at 13 for 2016. So these are just our key findings for Southeast Minnesota for 2015. Males ages 20 to 29 overrepresented. We have about 4 fatalities and 9.6 serious injuries per month. So as of January 23rd, which is today, we have had 15 traffic-related fatalities on Minnesota roads. That is in comparison to 14 at this time last year. Of those, 2 have been pedestrians. So we've done great work the past 13 years to dramatically reduce traffic-related fatalities, which we should celebrate. However, as Fausto said, we've hit a plateau. So we need to continue to educate and change the way people view traffic safety and instill this traffic safety culture, which will save lives. So because our ultimate goal is zero deaths. So what is traffic safety culture? It's the shared values, beliefs, norms, and attitudes that influence behavioral choices related to traffic safety. So to put this into perspective, if you believe that most people don't speed, you're less likely to speed. Does that make sense? So behavior modification really requires a change in the culture of roadway users, just meaning that it has become unacceptable for drivers to speed, drive distracted, etc. So we've recently launched a Message Monday campaign. Have any of you seen that on Highway 52? Any thoughts liked it?
I don't bike on Highway 52.
That's true. Is that illegal? So we've done this campaign to bring attention to safe driving. We relay messages every Monday in hopes of starting conversations that could positively change our state's traffic safety culture. Hopefully your kids are seeing these, you're talking about them at the dinner table, you're waiting on Sunday night to see what's going to come up on Monday. So what's been done locally? We have an Osage County Fatal Review Committee that meets quarterly. We review every fatal and serious injury crash that occurs in Osage County. We're looking for any trends. We have education at schools. We have education at workplaces. We have enforcement out there, not only writing citation, but really educating motorists. We have engineering efforts. We have EMS out there because fast, efficient response is critical. We also have a public health TZD coordinator that will be hopefully effective February 1st, be out there educating in schools, working with students and workplaces. So how can you be involved? The Southeast TZD Workshop, which I think is our 13th annual this year, will be held May 3rd at the International Event Center in Rochester. It's a free workshop, free parking, free lunch. It's a great way to meet traffic safety champions from your region. I strongly encourage all of you to attend. Like I said, it's free. I encourage you to visit our website, social media, get on our TZD mailing list. If you want any updates, I send out updates once or twice a week, maybe. And so you really hear what's happening in our region, whether it's news conferences or education, what we're doing. And also be a TZD ambassador. You know, as adults, if we're not making good choices behind the wheel, how do we expect our kids to make good choices behind the wheel? So looking forward, our goal for 2020 is 300 or fewer fatalities, which is attainable if we can save one life per year for the next 5 years. Each of us in this room have a goal of zero deaths. I mean, you guys asked, you requested this presentation, so obviously it's something that's important to you. But, so we all have zero as our number for our families and our loved ones. If everyone adopted our philosophy, they'd understand why zero is the only goal that we can shoot for. So I do have a quick 3-minute video that talks about the goal. Do you have time or no?
Sure. Is it online?
Nope, sorry. Well, I don't think it is.
Why don't you send us a link to it?
I can do that.
I just wanted to get a quick question in terms of working with MnDOT on these types of issues. I can point to places where MnDOT's invested substantial amounts of dollars, like the intersection of US 63 and US 52, where we have an alternative school down there, but the MnDOT projects have never allowed for safe pedestrian or bicycle access to that alternative school. What is our process as local elected officials to influence the engineering portion of these projects at a point where we can be more effective? Because I understand the highway portion of this, but you know, these pedestrian and cyclist fatalities, they're happening on state aid streets and state roads within cities.
Every project, when we start, before we actually go to action, there is a study, just like you do for the DMC. The second point of the project is when you define the need of the project, what are the issues, and the purpose of the project, how you can address them. And DOT uses that as well. And our projects are listed on the 10-year plan. It's available on the web that we all can seek and get information from and evaluate. But if there isn't a project that's coming and there is an issue that needs to be reviewed, our traffic engineer folks, in correlation with the city traffic engineer folks, can start an evaluation. How can we make this a project, and how can we bring this in the future for the DOT plan and actually fund it to create a solution? And sometimes safety money can be used. Federal Highway Administration has safety money for our region, and we use safety money to do those projects. But again, project needs to be evaluated, a study needs to be made, a purpose needs to be defined, and then for the environmental review of the Federal Highway Administration, the solution is devised at the end of the environmental review process.
I appreciate the information, but I look at the situation. There's been two major MnDOT projects down there in the last 15 years, and now there is an alternative high school down there that has no safe pet access, and if you look at an aerial view, you can see goat paths of kids going out and walking across South US 63. How did we miss the opportunity when these projects came up?
Well, maybe it was not identified then. Sometimes those things happen. We intend to be perfect and go down to zero deaths, but sometimes we cannot.
And maybe, you know, to keep us moving along, what is my process for formally initiating concerns, complaints, points of interest to address unsafe intersections that MnDOT plays a role in?
Through your city's traffic engineering, they can help you accomplish that.
But there's a formal process where we can create a document that puts it on MnDOT's radar?
Yes. Okay. A letter to the DOT district engineer, Jeff Lomick, stating this is the problem we're seeing, with support from your engineering department, and all traffic engineering folks will address those issues.
So, and does this apply to state aid projects then as well?
Any project. A state aid project is developed by the city itself.
Or county.
It's not developed by the DOT.
Right.
But we're
forced to follow your state aid standards, which promote speed over safety.
Which are standards developed by a group of elected officials and engineers that get together to propose to the Commission of Transportation. Mm-hmm. So we don't create those. We have a collegiate that work together to create those. But we are required to go by them, abide by them, once they are approved and developed. But we are available anytime if you need any support on the city side for any state aid or any county or city issue with the DOT, you can contact me.
Right.
I'll give you my card. I have my card.
I have your contact information. We've met.
Mr. Ruska?
Great presentation and a great goal to have. I hope we continue to work that direction and appreciate the work that all of you do out there. The one thing that I was surprised at that you just touched on it a little bit, but to me it's a real growing concern, is the usage of the personal devices and texting when people are driving. To me, it's become an absolute, it's getting totally out of control out there. Now, maybe you guys can share something different, some opinions on it, but I saw you touch on it just once, but a lot of the causes for deaths and accidents didn't seem to be pointed at that, and yet I see it happening all the time. So can any of you comment on that?
We see it a lot, too, in our personal cars, sometimes more in the squad car. The way some of the laws are now, it's difficult because the officer has to see it and witness it. And then there's kind of walk-arounds because it is not illegal to call on a phone right now. Minnesota Safety Council is trying to work on a bill right now to make it everything on a cell phone has to be hands-free. So that's a step that direction. And what that would do is provide law enforcement with a tool, and they're modeling it after the statute in New York used, that when a law enforcement officer sees that phone in your hand, that becomes illegal. And so now they don't have to guess and ask questions to find out why we're using that phone. So there's some steps are taken that way. But it has become a challenge, so we're having to think of creative ways to do that. And this area has been unique that they've worked with MnDOT and law enforcement, every agency here. See three law enforcement agencies where they put law enforcement officers as passengers in elevated trucks to get that perspective. But the other thing is, and it's difficult, but a lot of times as citizens, if you call in those complaints, it can create a flat backlog because there's a lot. But there's something about when you're doing it and you see the guy next to you calling on the phone or making some indication to you, that's something we can all do to let them know that's not acceptable. You know, I'm not talking about the road rage, but I've been asking law enforcement in Southern Minnesota to be creative, and we have a network where we can share ideas with somebody else did. But it's a challenge because it kind of crept up on us, and we're trying to come up with creative ways.
Well, I hope you have success with your state efforts there, and anything we can do to help, I'd be all for it. It's just, to me, and I understand the enforcement. I've seen those kind of examples of people getting in elevated vehicles And it's amazing how many, with the percentage of people out there that are on their devices while they're driving and obviously then not paying a lot of attention as they should be. So I commend you guys for working on it. I hope it's something that we can see a bigger part of that in your goals here moving forward, because I think it's become, you know, a real issue to move forward.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention that as far as the police department, when we're doing the serious and fatal accident investigations, that, you know, the distracted driving, texting, communications, most of the time that's an active part of our investigation, and we go through the process to determine if people were using communication devices during those crashes. So,
and do you report that so people know that that happens? So that, you know, I guess that educational piece out there really needs to be thrown to the forefront, I would think. So, good.
I just want to mention too, what Scott was talking about, the bill that he was talking about has been authored by two legislators. So watch for that.
Bipartisan?
Do you remember who she's
the y'all?
No.
Great answer.
I wasn't sure.
I know we have to keep moving, but in my understanding, next steps for this is that council members have an opportunity to point out these kind of situations, and we need to create a public record of where these issues exist within the city and formally have it submitted to the MnDOT process, because I know I've got a lot of these kind of intersections in my district that concern me. I know you have some too, so we got some work to do.
All right. Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
Yes, you too. All right. Interim parking ordinance.
So thanks for flying in.
You got to take off before we're done. I'm going to throw in our little discussion here. Let us let folks know what's coming. Because it's not the same as this, but it sure is related.
All right. Charlie, you ready to go?
Sure. Hey, that's not to talk about what the parking requirements downtown. So what we've prepared for you, your consideration, is a set of amendments to the land development manual relative to parking in the DMC district. I'll say that this work on this started late last summer, and it sort of emerged out of our discussions with the different people involved in the DMC effort, trying to come up with we thought there was a need for a consistent set of parking policies for the DMC district. Right now we have a situation where we actually have three different areas, and I'll say that are controlled by three different sets of parking requirements. So you have a central business district requirement where there's all use is exempted, or all new development is exempted from providing any parking. Then you have kind of a fringe area around the central business district where we have what's called a downtown parking overlay zone, which provides the ability for developers to reduce the amount of parking that they provide if they so choose, beyond what the underlying zoning would normally require. And then there's kind of a third area, which is largely the area to the west of 6th Avenue, going out the same areas out towards Highway 52, where the zoning requirements that apply in that area are the requirements of the underlying zoning districts. So we have a number of different districts out in that area. Some of the land zoned R4, some zoned R2, some are zoned D4. They have different requirements in each of those areas, depending on the underlying zoning. So given the vision of the DMC project, it seemed to us that even on an interim basis, and that's what we're talking about here really, is an interim ordinance that kind of had in place until all of the DMC studies are done, particularly the parking and travel demand management study is done, so that we have kind of a long-term vision of how to manage parking in the entire district. But even on an interim basis, to have better consistency so that everybody's playing by the same rules. another issue that came up in our discussions, I guess I'll call it, or describe it in terms of what's the purpose of city money, when should city money be used in terms of supporting and subsidizing parking within the DMC district, and we were hoping to provide some clarity to that, and establish a consistent process for addressing that question. And I think third, kind of trying to accomplish sort of getting a balance between having developers not oversupply the amount of parking that they need, and in turn to potentially trying to sell that parking for other uses that are for some off-site use, versus at the same time requiring at least some minimum amount of development to support the actual proposal that's in front of us. So kind of the three main areas, just highlighting some of the key changes that I laid out, and you know, I had these in the memo. We feel that the exemption for the Central Business District should be removed. One of the main things to us, you know, that we're seeing happen in the Central Business District is we're starting to get mixed-use development proposed. Bloom development, you know, part of the city, all these developments have housing components, you know, hotel, retail. And it seems to us, as we were putting this together, that certain aspects like the housing, parking that would support the housing, is not really a public function. So to exempt development from providing any parking, whether including housing or some other kind of non-public things, didn't seem to make any sense. That's at least under conditions the way they are now. It may have been different 15, 20 years ago when that exemption was put in, but we're in a situation where conditions are significantly changing.
Can I just comment on that? A long time ago, we weren't having a lot of housing built. It was mostly commercial and retail and that kind of thing. I will say, most of the projects we've had coming in have been providing parking. A lot of the proposals, the Bloom project proposes parking for their own needs, and then we're also discussing with them some public parking needs and make some arrangements. But we think the same will happen with the Michael site development. Today's Insight is also proposing parking. The Tycopas project is providing structured parking or underground parking. So they're providing parking. The question is, what's the maximum, what's the minimum for that? There still be a role for the public, I think, in some parking. We don't want to provide all the parking for these uses. But, you know, there are some of the main reasons the city got into parking was really for retail use. Maybe it was the original reason that we provided it downtown. And I don't think that's going to go away, neither is visitor use. So you'll still have some role. This kind of sets out some parameters for that. Some of this may change over time as we get more experience with it. We'll see how it all works. But it does kind of show that there's a changing role going on for public parking and how you invest in public parking.
And I think picking up on that, one of the things that the amendments try and encourage is the idea of joint development of parking, so that rather than having the city building freestanding facilities, that they're actually integrated into facilities that the private sector are also building, so you sort of have the potential for dual use, both the public use more in the evenings and, you know, the daytime office, retail, you know, business kind of use can use that space in the daytime. So that was another goal, and that's consistent again with the DMC plan and with even some of the preliminary information that we're starting to see come out of our parking study, is to really try and encourage joint development of parking facilities so that we get away from a city parking, you know, versus private, that's all kind of merged and managed as one system.
And we've already talked about that with several developers on the Holiday Inn project. What we're talking about is having one level of public parking that the city would somehow pay for, and in our view, maximize the use of their land without having the city build a totally separate parking ramp, and come up with some kind of a lease arrangement where we'd share in the revenues for that space. Discuss the same thing kind of with the Bloom folks. We had some discussions with the Alatas folks, but that didn't work out because of the issue with regard to bringing too many cars in to the downtown and into that area. So that kind of went by the wayside. But the concept, we've been actually discussing the same concept for some time now with several of the developers, and it's also reflected in here, but it's not something that we haven't considered in that. I think it'd be better to, we also discussed, and Charlie was involved in that as well, you know, having smaller public parking facilities in conjunction with these developments, so you have multiple options where you don't just put it all in one spot. So that's kind of some of the stuff we've been working on previously.
So based on the numbers we saw earlier about just not being able to bring more vehicles in, are we basically at the end of building public parking downtown?
That's a better question for Richard or one of the folks.
Well, and I don't think we know the answer to that yet, but between the parking model that's being developed as part of the work being done, and then tying that back to the discussion about how much capacity we have, 6 months, 9 months, we'll have a lot better handle on that.
Let's say you want a big load shift and you may want peripheral lots further out where you pick people off before they get in.
It certainly is a concern.
A lot of them.
Just a couple other things to highlight here. We included a clause that provides the opportunity to do, for example, what Mayo does, where they manage their parking on a campus-wide basis, so we're not looking at site-by-site development. That option is put in there in part in response to what Mayo does, but also it provides the opportunity for any other developer of any scale to do that same thing, where they would put together a parking and travel demand management program, and then, you know, that would be reviewed as sort of a freestanding program based on the actual characteristics of that development. So somebody could do that as an alternative to the basic standards in the ordinance.
Exceptions? You want to mention exceptions?
The exceptions, we've added more exceptions in the existing ordinance in the area around the central business district. So we had this parking overlay. We already had the ability to reduce parking requirements for things like providing bicycle parking, for providing transit improvements, and doing other things in terms of landscaping and some of those kinds of things. We've continued to include those, to retain those, and now those will apply throughout the DMC district. We've also added, again, some of the concepts from the DMC principles, this idea of shared parking, for example. And what that essentially means is if you have a mixed-use development where you have, let's say office use, maybe restaurant use and residential use, the parking demand of those uses varies across the day. So traditionally, you would look at each of those uses singly and say, okay, how much parking does the office need? How much parking does the restaurant need? How much parking does the apartments need? Add those three numbers up and come up with the overall total. The idea with shared parking is that office demand is during the day, restaurant demand is primarily in the evening, and the residential demand is in the evening and early morning. So you have the ability, particularly with the office, for example, versus the restaurant, to share some of that parking between the two uses. So we're trying to encourage that. We're not requiring it, but we are trying to encourage it.
We have a couple questions here, Mr.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I know you don't know exactly, but how long would you suspect this interim parking regulation would be necessary?
Well, I think it easily could be a year.
Okay.
The big issues really going forward are going to be some things that we're not really even talking about here, but they're going to impact this. Things like how is peripheral parking, for example, going to be paid for?
Mm-hmm.
And that influences, how you do it and who does it. So there's some big questions that have to be answered there, I think, before we can come to a final ordinance.
As we're zeroing in here, I mean, I think you're on the right track. This maximum parking and kind of defining that's a little bit new. That was part of my thought was just when are we going to reevaluate this? If it in turn is more than a year, are we going to come back and take a look at that? Because I think the goal really is to get the right amount of parking downtown, and it's, drawing that cut line is kind of a fine-tuning process.
And one of the key things there.
If I could offer, Craig Vaughn once again with the parking and TMA study team, An aspect of the parking and TMA study as well is a review, is a more thorough review, and not to mean that this one isn't, but it's a broader scope and a broader brush looking at all the integrated transit studies that we just talked about a moment ago. So actually that my study will be looking at this exact, and actually we already have contributed to some of the material that's in front of you, but this process is going to make additional recommendations on how to, again, refine this given what's going on with City Loop, the transit and the portal capacity piece. So the 1 year time frame is probably a good window, 9 to 12 months from now, because we should have additional information here in that 6 month time frame once the model starts to come, starts to become clearer to us and whatnot, and seeing how those things tie together. So a year time frame seems to fit.
One of the pieces of information that we really don't have a good handle on now, and I don't think historically we really ever have had a good handle on it, is when you think about providing public parking, let's say that's going to serve a certain area, it's really, like let's take the 2nd Street area out by St. Mary's. If you're going to put public parking in that area, where's the best place to put it given how far people are willing to walk, maybe, to get to a restaurant or walk to get to work or whatever from their parking space. One of the things that the study is doing is actually putting together a model that starts to take into account those specific kinds of factors. So we're actually going to be able to zoom into different sub-areas of the district and actually look at parking demand at a smaller area basis. And we really don't have a good way to do that right now. So that's something that will really be beneficial, I think, coming out of the work that's being done.
Yeah, thank you.
So right now we've effectively made... For typical business, downtown parking is essentially not an expense that they have to take on as part of the development process because they're in the central business district.
Right.
Is there any need in the interim ordinance? I assume that in the follow-on, we're going to need these folks to be contributing something for parking that supports themselves and probably paying for it outside of the downtown center. Is there a need to have that in the interim ordinance? Or are we going to lose a lot of opportunity in the intervening time?
Well, we hope not. It's a challenging question to answer, and we felt for the purposes of the interim ordinance it'd probably be better. But what the ordinance is trying to discourage is development of off-site employee contract parking. So, for example, somebody taking a lot somewhere and wanting to develop a parking lot or a parking facility for employees of mail or whoever. So what this interim ordinance actually tries to do is discourage that kind of development. I think any other parking user, when you take into consideration the principles of the DMC plan, whether it's customers of a business, patients, companions of patients,
mm-hmm.
patrons, event attendees, those are the kind of people we want to provide parking for within district. So the ordinance specifically lays out in terms of the purpose of parking that's developed that those are the people we're trying to serve. And
plus those people don't flood our roads at peak times,
right.
like employees do.
So our hope is that at least for a year period here, whatever it takes, that by discouraging the development of off-site employee parking, that we can kind of manage that. So if there is some built, it's pretty minimal until we get a better handle on how to approach this bigger picture of how we're going to provide, 15,000 or whatever the number of spaces needs to be.
Is there any, does this have any impact on, I think we've done some things to protect neighborhoods from, having residential turned into surface parking, but does this apply to the surrounding areas outside of the immediate DMC or just the DMC?
This is just within the DMC district. Now, there are other requirements already that are in the ordinance about adjacent areas and parking extending into a residential district from a non-residential district that would come into play. So there is some of that already in the ordinance.
I'd say there's some nuances whenever you start something new and say we're going to add this now as a new responsibility for developers. If you start, or whomever, if you add additional obligations to projects, and if you believe the assumption, and not all do, that these projects start with a gap,
Then if you add things like now you're putting in more parking than you were required to have before, you increase the gap. Or if you say you're going to put in affordable housing, you're going to increase the gap. And things like LEED. So, you know, those are things you're going to have to carefully weigh as you go along. You know, higher standards, higher obligations means there's likely to be higher costs. You know, how that affects the project, you're going to have to look at that. So one of the things to watch out for is, you know, when you start getting into something where you pay for something somewhere else, is what does it do to the project? Will the project be able to proceed or not? Because there is, at the end of the day, there's no free lunch on these things. You add, somebody's, you know, coming out of somebody's pocket. So,
Mr. Campion.
On some of these projects, I bet I could find a free lunch if we tried hard enough. But the other aspect is if, you know, we're burning, well, let me pick the right word. We seem to have, and I believe Mr. Freeze offered it earlier, a higher than expected interest in development taking place right now. So I guess I hold a similar concern to Councilmember Wojcik, which is if we're seeing a lot now and we're getting a lot of development agreements set up that don't include paying for park and ride slots that we need to develop on the kind of external part of Rochester, you know, are we missing an opportunity? I think that it begs asking anyway.
Because my whole view is you're seeing a lot of interest now, and a lot of interest is also predicated on getting funding for a gap. And I think over time, where you end up, where we thought we would want to go is you start over time. After you get, I mean, you want some good projects to start in the DMC. I mean, that's the whole point of it, is to get things off the ground. At that point, after you've gotten enough, you probably want to start morphing towards saying you're going to ratchet up the standards that we've been looking at, which is, in our mind, the kind of some of the benchmarks we're using is $10 private to $1 public, trying to get at least 25% or more of the income going for other purposes. And over time, you know, making that 12 to 1 or 14 to 1. And back in the day in downtown, we were at, I think when Rochester started in the early 80s, late 70s, it was like 4 to 1. Then it went to 8 to 1. Now we're at 10 to 1.
I think the one thing, along with what you just said, Gary, one thing that we would want to look at here, as soon as we can get information related to, you know, where the proper locations are for these peripheral lots, we could then include those areas into the economic development districts so that those captured increments can be spent there. That's going to be the key, because otherwise we really, as Councilmember, you know, Campion was just kind of alluding to, I think, is are we trying to set up agreements so that we're going to be able to do this sort of thing? And we need to know where that is, because right now, how we've been structuring them as of late anyway, we've just been capturing or encapsulating the whole DMC development district as the area in which we can spend the money. Mm-hmm. But there may be opportunities outside of the existing boundary.
Specifically, we don't want future parking in the DMC district for this.
Yeah, so exactly. Right. I mean,
you can use it for a bunch of other.
You're right, there are a whole bunch of other uses, but for parking, if that's a key element of where we need to focus resources, we're going to want to know where that will be.
I don't necessarily believe that this is going to drive a change in the gap, because right now the amount of parking that these projects are coming with are principally being driven by the banks, not our standards. And if we put the maximums in there and redirect that to another location, we're actually going to come out cash ahead, because it's going to be cheaper to build out in these other locations than it's going to be able to do downtown. I'd also say, too, your 10 to 1 is mathematically incorrect. You're at 9 to 1.
All right.
Nothing's 10 to 1.
Bet you a lunch on it.
Okay,
you're right. What are we additional comments?
Well, I was just going to say, so the process going forward would be for us to bring this to a council meeting on your agenda to have you initiate the amendment, then it will get referred to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
And so they would have, you know, their hearing and send a recommendation back to the council. So that will be at the next council meeting, as soon as there's no objection.
One thing we want to think about is who, you know, who ran into this, I think, with the Associate Bank to some extent, as to what's the applicable date and when it applies, because we have a couple of projects that are in the discussion stage, and we don't know what the interactive effects of this are with those projects yet. So you may want to you know, that they're to the point of having architectural drawings, or they're in having applications in the hopper now or soon to be. I think we want to take a look at that and at least let you know where that might be, because it's one thing to say somebody's already done some things and they didn't know about it and they're moving on, versus those that are starting fresh, and certainly these then should certainly be on.
Mr. Campion?
They're good, a lot of good work in here, I think.
I have a bright red line. Once they've made the application to the planning office, to me that's, you cross a threshold there. But what I get concerned about is like discussions. I mean, I have discussions about things I should do around my house all the time. My wife will tell you. Not all of them come true. So I think there's part of that is we just have to pick a point where we're going to draw the line. To me, that's an easy one.
If you do this, if you initiate it, it's already drawn that line. That's pretty fast in comparison to when we first brought this up for discussion.
If this is so important that we need an interim ordinance, this is so important that we need to apply it.
Gary, I would suggest when it comes back for formal adoption, if city admin owns us some very specific things that are pretty far down the pipeline, you could bring that to council and ask maybe for the attorney's office to help us in identifying how to disaster.
Perfect.
Perfect.
All right.
Other comments, questions, Mr. Campion?
I have one. This was a fantastic presentation of an amendment to an existing ordinance. And it's so good that I want to use as the basis for setting the standard going forward for what we're going to do for amendments to ordinances. I thought it was fantastic how you handled the redlining. It was all very well lined out. And especially I thought the commentary opportunity to put the comments for why people are seeking the changes in the median was fantastic. So I just want to say bravo. That was a great procedural enhancement. I'm sure we've done it before and people are going to say you're not the first, but you're the first person to show it to me. And this is, I really think the council, you know, I've talked about some of these standardization things we can do to speed things up. This was done expertly. And I thought, you know, holding everyone to the same standard about submitting these changes is not setting a bar too high. We obviously do it ourselves. This is the sort of thing that I would like to see going forward. Everyone produces documents this way. So thanks for that. I had just one other question if you could address. How and why are we setting minimum parkings?
Concern that we had as a group was that until we have the system better defined, that each development should have enough parking to be self-supported. So our plan was that there should be a minimum initially. When we come back in a year, it's possible that could be gone.
Okay.
Once we better understand, you know, what the entire system is going to look like.
I think that was what I was going to go toward is just making sure that's still on the table for future kind of discussion. Is if the market is driving this adequately and lending opportunities are driving this, I think we get out of the minimums now and we just kind of set a maximum. I think this is a good time, and it's happening all over the country. I don't know that we're any better at it than you know, people that are judging the economics of some of these projects. So great, that's my comments.
Anything else? I know we're on a hard stop for a couple of people. So this is going to come forward, and I agree. I like the way it's presented with the additional comments that clarify why the change is being requested. So we will look forward to that. Other questions or comments for this afternoon? If not.
Oh, I have one quick one. And since I'm still here, I'll bring it up because I was afraid I'd miss it. So last time kind of agreed to take on trying to bring back a proposal for managing some of the process and changes a little bit better. There's actually, just want to get on the radar, there are some changes ongoing with some something went to planning and zoning, received a denial, and I think we really have to evaluate what a denial at planning and zoning means in terms of opportunity to take corrective action before reaching the council. I get really concerned when significant portions are being redacted or changed in a meaningful way, because the entire system is set up to give ample public review, and to have it not actually get a second pass at planning and zoning, to me, skips a really significant milestone that should be applied to these. So just, I won't have time to correct the process, and certainly I don't think we'd have time to adopt it before then, but I think it's important everyone has it on their radar. that if this comes up, to know that I'd be bringing it up to talk about it, and frankly to address that as part of the action it takes.
Mr. Newman?
Yeah, I don't know if it covers Nick's issue, but on the staff level, we've mapped on the major and minor changes and have an initial draft of where we're at on it. We're going to try and schedule it for a call meeting.
Yeah, no, sorry. This is the process. I've agreed with the rest of the council to seek staff input, so I'm going to be working. All of you will be getting a telephone and meeting invite from me, and we'll get this.
And I think procedurally, the option is still there. Council can return something back to planning commission.
Sure. Okay.
We may not be able to do that for you.
Right.
But procedurally, it may have to come to you once the recommendation is made, and you can turn it back.
And I do think it's important that we as a council kind of agree when, what does a denial mean? And, I think there's some concern about, is a planning denial, is that really kind of saying go back to the drawing board and then just go straight to council? Or should it be saying instead go back to the drawing board and bring it back to planning for that full evaluation? And to me, they're really different things, how we're going to move forward here.
The recommendation is to you. So the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation is that the council deny. So that's the recommendation, you deny it. Once it comes to you, you can make your own decision, whether it's to return it back to Planning Commission because there's new information that you want them to consider, or if you feel you have sufficient information to act on it, either to approve it or deny it. And the attorney's office helps us.
Yeah, I guess that's the interesting part is so normally there's, a submission requires by our standard two public hearings. But when they go through the first public hearing and then substantially alter the application, doesn't that bypass one of the public hearing opportunities? That's what I get concerned about when I'm reviewing some of the things that are coming forward is the denial at planning zone becomes the basis for starting the actual work of defining the application versus the second step of the two-part public hearing process. So maybe we don't have to hash it out because I'm already late for my obligation, but I do appreciate the input. I'll be seeking it, obviously, before I bring anything back for the council.
All right. Anything else, Mr. Bilderback?
Mr. Bilderback and I will be bringing forward. We've been talking about doing this for years, but we're going to finally do it. We want to come up with a unified parking policy for neighborhoods surrounding downtown. That's going to, we're going to, Bilderback and I want to work with staff and neighborhoods to personally take that on and apply it citywide instead of having 122 different rules and regulations. Little side project doesn't necessarily involve the council, but there's been working with a group that's going to look at a process of coming up with a new flag design. It does not involve hiring a firm out of Boston, unfortunately, but it will call on our city. And it's not a city council necessarily supported process, but ultimately at the end, if we like what the process comes up with, it'll be city action to do that. And lastly, you all saw my TIF memo, and I'm always happy to have conversations with any of you if you have any concerns about that, but I wanted to get that information out there early for both this project and future projects. That's all I have.
All right. Anyone else? If not, we stand adjourned. Thank you.